You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 23rd of September. Learned resilience. The Denver Nuggets have it. Can the Utah Jazz get it? The Seattle Storm show a last-second play NBA teams could learn from. We'll start our series looking at other teams' rosters and who we might be interested in. And our first free agent deep dive is a surprising idea. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan. Today's episode brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and get $10 off your next order. All right, here's the plan. I've laid it out for the next month or so. Each day, we're going to do at least two of three things. We're going to, for the next 30 shows, 29, we'll look at a opposing team's roster, who they've got, what their cap situation is. Is there anything we can take advantage of that we might want to look at? We'll do it alphabetically. We'll start with Atlanta. Then for between now and free agency, which actually hasn't been defined yet, but in all likelihood is sometime in mid-November, we will take a look at free agents. Today, we're going to look at DeMar DeRozan. Most of these are guys I think we have a chance that we could look at, we'd be interested in. I've taken off many of the guys that we don't. I have kept a few on that are somewhat interesting. And so that I have broken down of who we're looking at every day between now and November 20th. The draft is scheduled at the 19th, and then I have some extra names if we need to. And DeMar DeRozan, I do think, is a little interesting. And I went back and listened to yesterday's show to see if we did a good enough job on the primer. There was one thing I didn't think I did a very good job of. And this, and I really just getting specific here for a second, then we'll get into the Nuggets win over the Lakers. I thought the Storm did something interesting. And Locked On Warriors was fascinating yesterday. So the teams that have cap space, the Hawks have between 43 and 50 million. The Knicks have about 42 million. The Pistons have 28. The Hornets have 27. So that's of max contracts available. The Hawks could have a max contract. The Knicks could have a max contract. That's it. Slots for a max contract. That's it. And I don't think, and I think the Knicks are more likely to use it to trade for Russell Westbrook or Chris Paul and bring in that type of max contract. Or just to leave cap space for 2021, as we talked about with the Heat yesterday. So when you look at slots that are max potential contracts, you look at that maybe there's two. Now, I'm not sure that there's any players other than Brandon Ingram and Anthony Davis that are actually max players, so it might be irrelevant. Then the next thing we talked about was that the mid-level exception's at 9.5. So how many slots are there? $20 million slots, right? Like, so how many players out there that are $20 million players? Well, the Hawks could go get one or two if they didn't use a max contract, and the Knicks could go get one, and the Pistons have a $20 million plus slot, and the Hornets have a $20 million plus slot. That's four. And then we have the Heat, who again, always seem to be hanging on to 2021. So there's four slots. And if the Hawks were to sign someone to a max, then this suddenly becomes two, right? That's how you look at it. There's four slots of players that could earn $20 million in the open market for contracts next year. Well, again, I'm not entirely sure that with the teams we're talking about that there are players for that. But, you know, if Andre Drummond didn't re-sign in Cleveland, that'd be a possibility. I suspect he will. If Oklahoma City doesn't re-sign Danilo Gallinari, I think that's a possibility that he could get $20 million from someone, that they see him as a pretty productive piece for them. Again, I think Miami could do it for 1 year, right, at $21 million. And then, so when you start to look at this, and we'll do this with DeMar DeRozan today, you know, then how many plus $10 million slots are there? So in other words, you're better than a mid-level exception player. Well, again, Atlanta could probably do one or two. Again, if they use their 20, then that goes away. The Knicks could do it. The Pistons, the Hornets have one or two. The Heat were in the same situation in the Sun. So there's only about six or seven players that could, overall, even like at 20 million, they're going to get more than the mid-level exception. So that if there is player movement in free agency, a lot of these guys, I think, are going to find a very sour market. And that's why we're going to look at DeMar DeRozan today. Because if San Antonio declines, I don't know what he has as a market. We'll talk about it. And then someone like the Jazz have to wonder, well, wait a sec, do we roll out $9.8 million on a mid-level exception for a player that good? Might be a wild card, but let's throw it out there to start this process. All right, Denver, LA last night. This gets interesting. Tom Ziller does a great job in his morning newsletter. If you're going to subscribe to something, I'd suggest it. He just does great work. I read him a lot. And uses stuff a lot. He talked about that the Nuggets have a learned resilience. You know, their two game sevens last year, their disappointing loss to Portland, that something in that group has built them a built-in learned resilience. Angela Duckworth's grit, all these things we've talked about. Is that something that maybe they're a year ahead of Utah in this process? That they're learning, they learned last year with their playoff failure in close games. We had a playoff blowout against the Rockets. We didn't learn any resilience from that series. We just got blown out. So do we learn something by losing to the Nuggets moving forward? This series is now interesting because all of a sudden the Nuggets offense clicked in. Now, were the Lakers just not into it? Who knows? And some of the things that we've talked about a lot here in this process about the Lakers, that their weakness is that they're not a great half-court offensive team, showed up last night. They have to get out and run. That's who they are. Now, I think there's some numbers last night that tell me the Lakers' effort wasn't very good. And maybe some areas. But on the other end, the Denver turned the ball over a ton, and that's usually a sign of defensive effort. The story last night is the Lakers' half-court offense was terrible, and they didn't get on the offensive glass like they did earlier. Like, they had 33% offensive rebounding rate in Game 2, and they had 12% offensive rebounding rate last night. And they actually got out in transition 22% of the time, an incredibly high number because of all the turnovers. But when they weren't in transition, Denver was just a much, much better half-court team than they were last night. You know, Anthony Davis is unbelievable. And there's talk that he's the best player in the league now. And all. The one criticism on Anthony Davis that I've always held to, and eventually it'll go away, he'll move past this, is that a few years ago we ran the numbers on standard deviation of performance. And he had the widest range of any star player. And I think we saw that last night. He had 27 points, which was kind of awesome. But he had 2 rebounds and 1 assist last night. And he wasn't particularly impactful or engaged in the game. He went back to kind of 2 of 6 on the mid-range jumpers. Like I talked about this on the show the other day. He's been hitting that mid-range shot. And if he in 1 of 5 on threes, like if you can keep him out of transition in the half court, at some point that those numbers should come back to bite him. That's what happened. Jeremy Grant made so much money last night. We want to talk about one of our mid-level exception slots. It's going above mid-level exception slot. It's going to Jeremy Grant. He guarded both LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Who does that? That was incredible. Not to mention he had 26 points, 3 rebounds, an assist, 2 steals last night. And was somehow minus 8. I don't know. Because he's on the floor with LeBron and Anthony Davis every game. That's why plus minus is a silly number. But he literally guarded both Anthony Davis and LeBron James. So when we're starting to play this free agency game, Denver's paying him money. Paying him lots of money. Why the Seattle Storm ran a play that the NBA team should look at, and a draft prospect that Locked On Warriors previewed that just from a big picture is really interesting. I'll share that with you. And then we'll dig into the Atlanta Hawks and DeMar DeRozan. It's all as we continue on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Locked On NBA today. Jake Madison, John Corrales along with you getting ready for the Game 4 of the Celtics and the Heat. Should be a good show. Today's show is brought to you by the store, 1600 South 20th East, also located downtown at the Gateway. You just get that great community feel the minute you walk into the store and see everything that's going by. I'm going to go by today. I'm going to take my two big kombucha bottles and fill that up. I might have to grab a mudslide cookie or two, pick up a few other fun things right around there because I love stopping by the store and getting that feel of being in a part of the community, seeing the high school kids and little older that are working there, helping the elderly out with their groceries, seeing Amy driving the groceries out to those that still don't want to come to the grocery store. It's a part of the community at 1600 South and 20th East. And then downtown, it's a little bit more of that urban feel, but it's great. Got everything you need. It's got the meals. Wednesdays are sushi day there. That's happening today. So grab the nice sushi rolls there. It's all at the store. 6200 South, 20th East. Also locate the Gateway. Please stop by. Today's show also brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar. I had the new caramel brownie yesterday. I got to tell you, liked it. Brand new flavor in limited release. Pumpkin chocolate chip cookie, limited release right now. You can order now. You can actually get 15% off your entire order, or you can use your promo code Locked On and get $10 off. But one of the new flavors is the caramel brownie. I had it yesterday right before my bike ride. Terrific. Mint brownie, still a very good solid. The chocolate coconut right up there. As I said, impressive by the orange. Bunch of them on sale right now at BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code Locked On and you end up with $10 off your first order. You can get all 18 flavors in a built bundle, or you can get order now and get about three of your packs as well. Built Bar, if you compare it to the leading men's bar, you have 120 fewer calories, 3.5 grams less fat, 17 grams less sugar, and 7 grams more protein. So it's yummy. It's delicious. Your mouth, what is their silly phrase they have? Your mouth is never, I don't remember what it was. I don't want to get it wrong. Gosh forbid. It's all at BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code Locked On. Check out the new pumpkin chocolate chip cookie flavor. So last night, the Seattle Storm went on the final play of the game. And the Seattle Storm have the one WNBA player in Breonna Stewart who probably can do a lot of the things NBA players can do late in games. And if you watch an NBA game late in game, you watch Brad Stevens, great coach Brad Stevens, and Jason Tatum late in the game, what do? They sit outside up top, and they cross it over a few times, and they take a wild step back at the horn to make sure that you get overtime and in a tie game, and then you don't end up with them getting an extra possession. Last night, the Storm was Sue Bird, the greatest point guard in the history of the women's game. Breonna Stewart, the previous MVP and probably best player in the world. Aisha Wilson might disagree a little bit, but so they could have just given the ball to Breonna Stewart, let her go one-on-one. Instead, they ran a really good play. They inbounded to Breonna Stewart. Sue Bird inbounds to Breonna Stewart. Bird comes back to get it off Stewart. And then they play the tie game about 8-7 seconds left. Sue comes left to right off of Stewart. And then flares back to Stewart in a way so that she can drive with the right hand down the lane toward the basket. There's about 4 seconds left. The idea is that Breonna Stewart's best player in the world. She's going to get to the rim, lay it up, and in the floor spaced. It doesn't work. They cut it off. But Gary Kloppenburg, who once was my on-the-road roommate in the WNBA early days, has Whitcomb spaced into that corner. So that when Stewart drives and gets cut off, then she comes off the backside of Stewart, gets a handoff, drives with the left hand into the basket, and gets a layup with a second and a half left. She actually misses, and from the weak side, I think it was Lloyd or someone of that nature. It wasn't Lloyd. Can't remember who it was. Slides in from the corner, or from the 45, and rebounds. Well, she also, frankly, was cutting. If they had a few more seconds, Whitmore could have given it to her if she needed to. It just had options. It had things to it. It had opportunities. It wasn't just one guy standing there isolating. It was going to run late enough into the clock so the other team wasn't going to get a shot. If Stewart's cut off or they double-teamed because she's that good, there was somebody available the whole time. It just was a beautifully spaced play with activity, with movement in the final seconds of a basketball game. And we just don't see that enough in the NBA. So tip of the hat to Gary Kloppenburg and the Seattle Storm last night on that. Quickly, before we dig into the Hawks, the Locked On Warriors Locked On Hawks, particularly two shows, are doing great draft work. Tyrese Haliburton was the focus of Locked On Warriors, the Iowa State guard. They made quite a compelling case that he would be this year's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, this year's Tyler Hero in the draft. That while everybody else is talking about James Wiseman or Anthony Edwards, and this draft's not as good, that he's going to move, that he actually could move up in the draft and be, you know, a really solid player. Probably, you know, some people actually have him projecting the top five. He's kind of the hot guy right now. But they did a breakdown on him yesterday on Locked On Warriors. So if you're a big draft guy and want to get it, Tyrese Haliburton, it's interesting. He's skinny. I mean, I only learned about him yesterday. I don't follow these things until I watch them. So tip of the hat there to those guys. I thought that was good. All right, let's look at Atlanta. First thing we're going to look at all the players is Locke's point gain system. So points gained on Atlanta, John Collins, 3.1, Trey Young, 1.5, Damon Jones is a center, 1.1, Derek Walton, who played 25 games at 0.2, Jeff Teague at minus 0.2, so about even. He's a free agent, I believe, maybe player option, but he's kind of out of there, what they want. Bruno Fernando, minus 0.2. Charlie Brown, who played just 9 games and is not the cartoon character. Kevin Huerter, the young rookie, was still a minus 0.7. Brandon Goodwin, who's kind of an unnamed free agent, young point guard, had a minus 0.7. DeAndre Bembry, who's an athletic defensive player at 0.8. Vince Carter retired. DeAndre Hunter, young and developing. Trayvon Graham, Evan Turner, Dwayne Dedmon, who they acquired through the year. Tyrone Wallace and Cam Reddish, their rookie, who did not really develop. So, you know, Atlanta's interesting because Atlanta's got all of this cap space, right? So, you know, Atlanta's not one of these teams. As we're looking at every team, Atlanta, you know, I almost didn't do Atlanta first, frankly, because they're kind of boring. But let's do it. So, you know, Atlanta does not have the circumstance where they're going to be in cap trouble, where they want out from under a contract or anything of that sort. So from that standpoint, you know, this is, you know, they have, the only thing they have that's interesting is they have $13 million in Dwayne Dedmon, that they probably would rather not have, but they reacquired him and got him. They have Clint Capela as their centers, and then they just have all their young players that are on minimum salaries. Jeff Teague, they have the bird rights to. At 32 years old, I would be stunned if they went back after Jeff Teague. So they have the bird rights on him, and he will probably move on. They have two young players that are at least interesting. Scott Labossiere, who was supposed to be really good and never kind of panned out on this whole thing, could give him a qualifying offer, and we'll see what they did. He was in Sacramento, then went to Portland, ended up in Atlanta, now he's just bouncing around. Does somebody still believe in him as a skilled player? They could give him a qualifying offer of $3.4 million. Frankly, that seems high for him at this point in his career. So I think he'll suddenly become available. Damon Jones, who at one point, you know, because he was on the Warriors, everyone loved him so much. He was out of Vanderbilt. Interesting player. He signed a 4-year deal with the Warriors along the way, got moved in some deals, same kind of thing. And he has a qualifying offer at $3.5 million. So this is a lot of the reason why we talk about these backup centers as players that, you know, are probably, you know, I keep talking about, like, you don't pay your backup center. The analytics world says you don't pay your backup centers very much. Well, this is why. Like, if you believe that Damon Jones is actually a viable backup center in his third year out of Vanderbilt, you can probably get him, you know, at this point for, he played, started 27 games this year for Atlanta, 22 the year before for the Warriors. He averaged 5 points, 4 rebounds. He played a viable 17 minutes a night. Would they have both Dwayne Dedmon and Clint Capela? I'd be surprised they picked up his $3 million option. He's probably going to be out there for $1 million. A good athlete, 25, you know, like that. That's the, someone's going to pick him up, unless Atlanta at 3.5 might keep and think they can move Dedmon. But like, that's a pretty good piece to the puzzle there somewhere at 25 years old. And I can't imagine it's going to make more than $3.5 million. He's, you know, there's we could go look at B-ball index on him, and we're not going to, you know, he's probably the most interesting player we have out there, right? But he's not someone who, he's not a game changer, but he could probably give you 12 minutes a night, right? Like, and frankly, you know, he's our version of Tony Bradley. So we kind of have this already. I think we're paying Tony right around that same number of value of on contract this upcoming year. So those are, they're both late first round draft picks. Tony's probably got more offensive rebounding and offensive skills than Damon Jones does. And Damon Jones probably has more pure athleticism than what you're going to get from Tony Bradley. I mean, a quick scan of the B-ball index, his strengths are his interior defense, his roll gravity, and his finishing. His highlighted top strengths are percentage of rim contest, total roll impact, and his finishing at the rim rating. He, if you take just kind of perimeter shootings, he has no outside game. Finishing, they give him total shots at the rim, high number, because that's it. Like, he's a within 5 feet around the basket guy. We don't need to spend a lot of time on him. Passing, no surprises. Like, if you dig, this is where B-ball index is really good. Find a player like Damon Jones. Is there, like, some surprise in his playmaking? No, he gets an F for potential assists and his assist rate. He gets a total F there. Roll gravity, he's good. Finishing at the rim, he's good. Off-ball movement, he's good. Defensive rebounding, he's a B+. Offensive rebounding, he's just like Tony Bradley. He's great. So this is, you know, this is not necessarily a player we need, but he's just someone who's out there and somewhat readily available along the way. Scalabossier is another one who just never quite developed. He's out of Haiti. He kind of floats in between being a stretch and not being a stretch. He's tried to do a lot of shooting and become a better perimeter shooter. And he gets, you know, literally the worst pull-up shooter in the league, one of the worst catch-and-shoot shooters in the league, worst F for above the break. So those are just skills that he's never developed. Shoots 23% above the break. So, we look at a roster. Look at these guys. Those are the ones that become available. He's a similar thing where he has some roll gravity. His offensive rebounding is really good. His defensive rebounding numbers are actually surprisingly good. I always think of him as being a little skinny and being a little weak in that process. So, you know, you look at Atlanta, probably not a lot of guys there. Is there anyone that we would want that they, you know, the next step on this is there anyone on that Atlanta roster that we would want to trade for that they are no longer interested in? And they're not at a stage where they're giving up on any of their young guys, and they don't have anybody that's under a really bad contract that they need to move with their cap space. So they don't probably have that. We'll look at DeMar DeRozan, the free agent, and figure out what his market is. And just on a wild card, if he got available, is that someone you'd want to go get for the Utah Jazz? Today's show is brought to you by Shamrock Auto. That's Rob Taylor, not Rob Thomas of Matchbox 20. Rob Taylor, Shamrock Auto, good people out in Pleasant Grove. Fun story. Rob decided he wanted to open up a car dealership to change the way it's done. So the first thing he did is he and Brady Kimball, they got a technician for over 25 years. That's now the guy who goes and buys all their cars. And so when he buys all their cars, they know exactly what they're going to get. Most of the cars you're going to see at Shamrock Auto are 6 to 12 months old, 5 to 20,000 miles. But you know what? You can pick up the phone and call Rob and tell him exactly what you want. You know what he'll do? He'll go get it for you. Like, that's the beauty. 801-319-2250. That's 801-319-2250. Go to the website, shamrockauto.com. He always says, please go check out our reviews. Read our reviews. Read our reviews. Read our reviews. They're a lean company with fewer employees. They can't afford to take hours in the sale process. The margins are too tight, he says. So the primary reason, you get final pricing in 5 minutes, no salesperson on a test drive, and no long sales pitches. Instead, you get in, get out, no gimmicks. Go check it out. It's all at Shamrock Auto. Call Rob at 801-319-2250. That's 801-319-2250. You might get him on a local bike ride. He's a great rider. He's always out there all the time, but you can call him, and he'll help you out if you're looking for a specific car. Most of their inventory are the Utah Salt vehicles. So we're talking Suburbans, Yukons, big SUVs, Expeditions, minivans. But he can get whatever you need, and he can get it out there for you. Most of them 6 to 12 months old and 5 to 20,000 miles. It's all at Shamrock Auto. Call Rob at 801-319-2250. NFL fans, our new Locked On NFL host, nine of our local experts. Fridays, we have the gambling segment with Action Network. Wednesdays, we look at the NFL draft and what the impact of going on is. And Tuesdays, a little extra fantasy segment. That's all Locked On NFL. I told you that we've got this scheduled out, and it's all alphabetical, so you guys can probably begin to figure this out. But so tomorrow on the show, we will look at the Brooklyn Nets, which is actually probably in some ways a little bit more interesting. And our free agent tomorrow, Danilo Gallinari, to see what kind of market he has available. Probably not someone on the Jazz end of things. We already have Bojan Bogdanovic, but let's look at DeMar DeRozan. So first off, on points gained, which is our offensive metric, if you don't know it, it evaluates how you use your possessions above or below league average. What's interesting about DeRozan is he was always kind of the poster child of being a negative points game player, but he's not anymore. He's now a plus 1.4, even though he didn't shoot threes very, very much still. He's still just a mid-range shooter. He's become so good at it, and there is, you know, some feeling that at times late along the season and late in games that mid-range is ever more important. I'm not sure I totally buy it, but there is some value to that conversation. So is Atlanta going to use any of their $43 million with their young team on a ball-dominant player like DeMar DeRozan? No. Are the Knicks going to use $41 million for DeMar DeRozan? I think it's unlikely, but they could possibly do a one-year deal that keeps him in play and makes him decent. Are the Detroit Pistons going to play for $28 million, use any of their $28 million for DeMar DeRozan? So what gets interesting here on the Pistons is often there's a pressure for the Pistons ownership to be a playoff caliber team right on the edge. They've tried that a lot. They may move past that. And if they do move past that, then all of a sudden you're dealing with, you know, a possibility that they would, if they don't move past it, that they would actually want some of that nature. That's a wild card. The Hornets, are they so desperate that they'd use their $22 million of cap space on DeMar DeRozan? Seems unlikely. Miami doesn't use it. And I doubt the Suns use $19 million on DeMar DeRozan. So if San Antonio decides they're not re-signing DeMar DeRozan, and I don't have really any feeling at all of where the Spurs are as a franchise. You know, as long as Pop is there, I would guess that they probably don't want to rebuild. But on the other end, are they really about to, you know, roll this thing back out there another time? That seems even more unlikely to me. Though they re-signed LaMarcus Aldridge mysteriously to a long deal, and maybe they're going to just decide that they're not, like, there's nothing about them that's a championship team. So they are, you know, there's, you look at them and they're not a championship team. Like, that's abundantly clear to all of us. So what are they doing? How are they playing? And I think that's where it gets kind of interesting of whether or not possibly they just decide, you know what, we're not re-signing DeMar DeRozan. Now he's on the open market. And I just laid out for you that I'm not sure that any of the teams that have cap space would be signing DeRozan. I mean, he's making 27.7. He's 30 years old. I don't think I'm signing him to a 3 or 4 year deal at a big number. He's the most fascinating case because he's actually gotten to be a better player, but there's still aspects of him. So let's look at DeRozan for a second and break him down. His ability to score one-on-one, his ability to finish, his playmaking is vastly improved. He's a much better passer than people give him credit for. His perimeter shooting, though, is terrible. He gets an F according to B-Ball Index on his perimeter shooting. His pull-up shooting's a D-minus. His catch and shooting's F. He's not good at it. His openness rating is low. His total gravity three-point shooting's an F, so he hurts your gravity because you're laying off. His one-on-one ability, though, is an A. Total isolation, A. Impact, A. Isolation field goal percentage, B+. Isolation foul drawing, A-. Suddenly put DeMar DeRozan on the wing. And you got to, you know, his drives, adjusted drives, 75 possession, A. Put him in Quinn Snyder's offensive system, it gets pretty interesting. Total shots at the rim, he's a B. We like to get to the rim. That's where you want to be. I think this is the part of his game that's vastly improved. His drive out passing is now a B. His assist rate is a C. His foul drawing is a B. He's not brilliant, but he's not like just a ball hog. He just happens to be a mid-range non-3-point shooter. His overall finishing talent is in the 95th percentile. His finishing rim rate's in the 98th percentile. His shot difficulty's in the 93rd. Playmaking, which is really interesting. His assist points per 75 possessions puts him in the 84th percentile. His potential assists on 100 passes is an A. So in other words, he gets the ball, he's going to work, he gets enough attention, his pass out is to somebody who has a good look. High value assists per 75 offensive possessions. So in other words, 3-point shots, free throw assists, rim assists. A minus. So really interesting player here because DeRozan has been criticized despite scoring 20 plus points a game because he won't stretch the floor. He's not a 3-point shooter. But he's gotten, his isolation game is unique. He's definitely a little bit of a ball stopper, but he's still a ball mover. Doesn't have roll gravity. Doesn't really have a post game. Terrible offensive rebounder. Below average defensive rebounder from our standpoint, like with small guards, like that would be a wing player we might need. Do you sign and trade? You sign DeMar DeRozan on a deal and a sign and trade deal? I don't know. And suddenly, you know, that's what someone's going to do. If the Spurs say no, someone's going to do a sign and trade deal for more than the mid-level exception to be the one who gets them. And you're sending somebody back to San Antonio that they might want. Defensively, he gets a D on his turnover rate, an F on his loose ball reaction, a C minus on his pickpocket rating, his C on his passing lanes, his gets an F on 3-point shoot contest, an F on rim deterrence because he's small. And they, for the most part, defensively put him on the fourth tier guy. So they hid him a little defensively. But he moved around a little bit. Overall impact rating, player impact rating, which is the Josh Goldstein system, he got, this is where it's so interesting, he got a D, an A minus offensively, an F defensively. Real plus minus, DeMar DeRozan got an F, C plus offensively, an F defensively. Raptor, they gave him a C, an A minus offensively, an F defensively. And box plus minus, they gave him a B, an A minus offensively, and a D defensively. So the grades across the board from player impact are a D, real plus minus is an F, Raptor is a C, and box plus minus is a B. It's not a guy that if you're the Spurs, you probably should be busting out $20 plus million dollars for. But is he suddenly at a mid-level exception player become, because of some of his unique things that he does so well, somebody that you're willing to go get? I think it's an interesting debate on DeMar DeRozan. All right, that is Locked On Jazz today. Tomorrow we'll look at Danilo Gallinari and the Brooklyn Nets. Hope you had a great one. Thanks very much for tuning in. Have a wonderful day.